Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Sedona Talk Radio Live and also on Blog Talk Radio, and we are also archived on iTunes. So please feel free if you missed some of the show or if you'd like to listen again. All of these shows are archived on all of those links. You just click right on today's home show page underneath the name or the description of the show, and you'll find various links there to be able to listen to the archives. So thank you so much for being with us today. We're going to have a great show today. My guest today is Carl Johan Kallman. He is the author of The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. It is a first volume of the Paradigm Shift Trilogy, and it's a novel theory about our origins. You know, how did we get here? Why do we think the way we do? What's really been happening over the last several centuries? And, you know, what part do we play in the universe? But really, the biggest question, why does all of this matter? You know, we always say that we're self-thinkers, and, you know, maybe we can do things because we know about it from our past, or potentially we say, oh, I think that might work or it might not work, or all kinds of different things go through our head, you know? But I really think the most profound statement is the first sentence in Carl's book, and it says, the mind is very powerful, and if we set our minds to something, we can move mountains. Now, how many of us have all heard that? We hear, oh, old wives' tale. Oh, that must have been set in stone. Where has that been? Some old book. Oh, maybe, you know, you see it on Facebook and they're sticking it on the bottom of their little photos with somebody's little thing that says unknown author. I don't know. Can we move mountains? Can we not? How powerful is our mind? All of these questions have been coming up lately. I had spoken to Carl just before the show, and he and I said, you know, could we really have this discussion maybe in the 70s and 80s when I, you know, I grew up in the 50s. Gosh, then it was mostly very basic things. You go to school, you learn how to read and write, you get out of school, and you get a job. Now we're talking about evolution, paradigm shifts in our mind and a global consciousness. Wow. Where have we evolved to, and how quickly? So it's a great pleasure to have Carl with us today. Carl, thank you so much for joining us. It's a real pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Jeanette. I'm happy to be on this show. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Don't you think it's a pleasure to have you? Because, you know, at this time, I think, as we've said, I don't think we could have had this discussion a long time ago. You know, I think we've just, what our minds are able to accept or conceive or grasp onto is what probably what happens in that era of time. I don't think we could have said, oh, I'm going to sit down and awaken. I mean, that was the hippies were trying that in the 70s, but certainly it didn't grasp, right?
No, right. You know, from the perspective of the Mayan calendar, what we may or may think in different eras is determined by the evolution of the mind, because the mind is something that is activated and deactivated, you might say, at certain time points in a large plan for the evolution of the mind. And at certain time points, it just doesn't seem possible to think certain thoughts. And on the other hand, when certain shifts happen in this global mind that I'm talking about, then it is possible. And everyone seems to be coming to some kind of a consensus way of thinking, not totally speaking, of course, but there are some paradigms that are suddenly, you might say, allowed, that simply wasn't allowed before that. And why do these things happen? Well, I think we get like almost like a full explanation to this by studying the Mayan calendar. We may never understand all its details, but in principle, yes, it's the time plan for the universe is very much also a time plan for how our minds are to evolve, and that is not just something of our own making. It's partially of our own making, but what is allowed and what is not allowed, allowed within quotations, so to speak, it comes with a higher plan, so to speak, and there is a logic to this. Like the Neanderthals, like 50,000 years ago, it wouldn't be meaningful for them to have a lot of thoughts that we would have today. Things have to fit into this big evolutionary scheme that the Mayan calendar describes. That's how I look upon it.
And I definitely believe that because, you know, you can look at, as you've said, you look at the pyramids and you look at these great architectural structures in the past, and then you look at a time lapse after that where really nothing did happen or things were simpler then, as they call them. And then you have another flux of greater input or brain activity or brain intelligence, and things move forward. I know myself, and on a simpler context, I was recently in Baltimore with my daughter, and all of the roads were on hills. Yet if you looked at the buildings that have been there for the last 300 years, you'd see the dates on them. They were even though the road was a hill, the building was level. So it was sort of like you would see the road and it would come up through the first, second, and third floor of a building. And I'm going, how do they build that? How do they, I mean, even I cannot conceptualize how they would build that today. Did they drop the building on flat land and then build these hilly roads? Or did these buildings get cut into the roads? You know, I couldn't even conceptualize that myself. You know, like how do...
Yeah.
Those lines and those angles, I'm going, and I even said to her, I said, you know, look at that building. All of those they were the curves of the building and all of those big stone hedges and everything up there. I said, how do they make those? Are those marble? Are those stone? And she goes, I don't know. What the heck? You know, I can't think about that. And I look at it and I think, where did that come from, you know? Because I certainly know that my ancestors would not be able to bring that up, and I know that people that I know now would not be able to figure out how to do that. So when you look at the Mayan calendar, that is exactly what you're saying, is that, you know, we can conceptualize and do these things, but there's times when we can't, or maybe when we're on a maybe lurch when we're ready to go to the next level.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that, you know, the evolution of the mind, and we our individual minds are part of a global evolving mind. It provides like certain windows for thinking certain ways, a certain time window, so to speak, and then these will close at one point, and when they close, we don't really fully understand, as you were saying from Baltimore, we don't fully understand how things were done, because people had a different mind then, and we don't have that mind, and we can't really get into that. We just see it, and like people have been doing with the Egyptian pyramids for such a long time. It just seems like an incredible thing that is beyond our thinking. And it seems like what we can do, I would say, in order to understand such a phenomena is to look at the Mayan calendar, and we can understand that they had a different mind in those days that would allow them to create this kind of a structure. But to a large extent, to us, with the minds that we currently have, it belonged to a previous window, so to speak. And that's why we stand in such total awe of many things that ancient people did.
So can you talk to us about the Mayan calendar? Because, I mean, as many have said, is that it ended, correct?
Yes.
And if it ended, where do we go now? Are we in an abyss? Are we in a space, or are we creating another new something, whatever? So let's talk about the Mayan calendar. What is it? Why did it end? What did it show us? And then where do we go now?
Well, I should provide a little bit of a background to the Mayan calendar, what it is, and why talk about it at all. In the hype before 2012, people even lost that. They didn't ask that very relevant question. What is it that makes it so different that it's something that we really should pay attention to? And the way I have come to understand it through my research that covers a couple of decades, really, when it comes to the Mayan calendar, is that we are used to calendars that are based on the physical reality, typically then the astronomical cycles, which are, physical bodies circulating around each other, the moon around the earth, and then we count how many months there are by et cetera, et cetera. And this is not the way the Mayan calendar works. It is not based on the physical reality. And that's what makes it so special, because I don't think there is any other calendar on our planet that is not physically based. And so then, what is it based on? Well, what the ancient Maya describe, and even the contemporary Maya to some extent, is that time periods are characterized by what you might call spiritual archetypes or metaphysical realities, so to speak. And then these they are symbolized by signs and divinities and so forth. There could be a day that's called the rainstorm day, and then that's a way. That doesn't mean there is a rainstorm in the physical sense. It means that the spiritual energy, essence of this particular time period, is rainstorm. And when you then start to look upon time or history through the lens of these spiritual qualities that the Mayan calendar describes, that's when you start to see that, wow, there is actually a metaphysical plan behind what is happening here in the world. So the Mayan calendar is a calendar of spiritual energies, and that, I would say, is unique in the world. And then when it comes to everybody had the perception, and so did I, that the calendar would end. And actually, it didn't. It was a mistake, I think. And, I on my own part, I simply couldn't see really what the patterns of evolution according to these archetypes would be after the shift. But I think the calendar is simply continuing, and we were not able to see that 5 years ago, how it would continue, because it was all sort of gearing up. Time was accelerating very markedly up to a certain point, and now time is not accelerating anymore. It has attained its highest frequency of change, and it won't increase that frequency of change. And so we're in a new spot. The calendar continues, this is something I will deal with in the third volume of my trilogy. But this one is really just on the more easy part, which is to look at the past and see how that conforms to these spiritual energies that the Mayan calendar describes.
And also you talk about the mind, as part of the global mind, and we talk about our brain and our thoughts. And those four words right there, if you throw them up in the air, you come down with, oh my goodness, that's most of your book. So I really think that if we could start talking about that, I mean, people say my brain thinks, I think, I can do it, or I don't want to do it. And they think that's the basis of their, I'm taking free will and I'm going with it or I'm denying it, and that will be my presence. So really, what is your thoughts on, let's start with the brain, I guess, and we'll work up to the global mind, or do you want to work the other way? Either way is fine.
No. It's fine. Well, you know, I for a very long time there's been this discussion. Is the mind a product of the brain, or is the brain something that sort of focuses and crystallizes a larger consciousness field? And my book here provides, I would say, very, very strong evidence that the mind is not a product of the brain. The mind is rather something that our brains download. Our brains are sort of serving to crystallize thoughts in that exist in this overall consciousness field. Just a second. I think, you know, many of these words that we're using, we say, I think, or my right. brain came up with this. I think much of that is actually illusions. It's sort of ego-based illusions that we like to have because we want to place importance to ourselves. But in reality, what is happening, I think, is that our brains are just picking up things that is going on in this global consciousness field, and then we speak these things that we tend to just too much emphasize the I in the whole scheme, so to speak.
So is a brain a conduit for deciphering the energies and like putting it into word form?
That would be a good way, I would say, of saying it. I would say so. I think so. That's a good way of saying it.
And sometimes we have people who say, I know I do this all the time. I will say, I have no clue what came out of my mouth just now. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
So really, that is a perfect example of what you're saying, picking up on this global mind coming through. I know there's many times I've written stuff on the computer. I would just sit down and start typing, and maybe year, 2 years, I'd look back at it and say, oh, my goodness, I wonder who wrote this. And I'd get to the bottom, and it was mine. And I would go, wow, didn't know that ever came out of my brain, you know. And I think that's where, you know, and I think that's where some people, you know, I think we're starting to have more of that now.
Yeah.
But we need to also pay attention to that. Versus the idea of I'm going to do this because, or I'm going to do this since I know or I believe. When I know, when I believe, and because, all of that is really judgment, and what that does is that encases it in our past, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Versus being able to go broader forward.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I recognize that exactly what you're saying. When I sometimes read passage, or people quote things I've said, and I can. It's actually better than I would think of myself as thinking.
Correct.
So really, what I'm saying then is that when you get into a certain state where you're creative and writing, so to speak, really what you're doing is that you're tapping into this consciousness field that is a little bit more intelligent than you are yourself. I would say.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Because I look at it and I say, I don't even understand it now, but it can. I said it. I apparently it passed through. So we think of that. So I think that there's a lot more of that going on now, you know, as we've come through evolution. So how do you decide about now going from the brain to our thoughts and how to use them, and then what does the global mind mean? And with the connection to the earth. Big topic.
Yeah, it's a big topic. And ultimately the mind is sort of something that it comes out of a universal consciousness field. But mm-hmm. and that consciousness field undergoes change according to what we talked about earlier, that there are shift points that are providing windows for certain ways of thinking and mm-hmm. so forth. But here on our planet, this universal consciousness field is initially mediated through the core of the Earth, the crystallized structure of the core of the Earth, which has a separation between the Western and the Eastern Hemisphere in the same way as our brains have a separation between the left and the right brain half. And so our brains is in resonance with this kind of a mental polarity that is actually mediated through the Earth. And the mind is not a static thing then, and that's why there has been this tremendous evolution of civilization, especially over the past 5,000 years. But it's a global mind, and what this means is that it changes on a global scale, and pretty much everyone, even though it's not an immediate effect, but as soon as there is a shift in this global mind, people over the world will, sooner or later, they will absorb this shift. They will download the new version of the mind, the mind mm-hmm. version 2.0 or whatever you might
right.
call it. I think that's a very good analogy and with these computer programs. And it doesn't mm-hmm. mean that, that everybody thinks the same. It's more like people are starting to use the same version of the mind, and at least that allows them to communicate. I mean, it's like if you take the word program on from Microsoft that so many people are using, it doesn't mean that everyone using this will think the same thoughts or write the same thoughts, but there is still a framework that all these people have in common, and that's the same thing with a global mind. It provides a framework that everyone has in common, and that framework changes with a certain predictability, but when it changes people all over, sooner or later, you might say, it's not an immediate effect, but they will mm-hmm. adapt to it. They will download this new version, but still have a certain individual way of using this new mind in the same way as we use computer programs. That seems to be how it's working.
And I think that that's what gives us diversity in the individual, because then there's so many different types of people. There's so many different types of what they're doing on the earth. I mean, we need that diversity. So we really don't want everybody to be thinking the same conceptual idea. We want different versions of it in different areas and different aspects of life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking so much about oneness these days, and certainly I adhere to that. But oneness is not sameness. And in this book, I'm telling people to consider the possibility that everyone else in the world would be exactly like you are, thinking exactly the same thoughts that you
mm-hmm.
did. Life would not be worth living under those conditions. You would think that,
right.
If I get out of here, if I kill myself or something, it doesn't matter because everybody else thinks the same way.
Right.
I have nothing individual to bring to this place. So we absolutely have to have that diversity. It's just that we shouldn't let the diversity lead into irreconcilable conflicts and so forth. But the diversity is not a luxury. It's really what makes life worth living, I would say.
I think sometimes those diversities, I think of it as an example. If you take five toddlers and You know, one wants to go smell the flowers, another one's peeing on the grass, another one's eating, you know, the tree bark or whatever. That's diversity, you know, and it's just at that time. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I just see it as just something so different. You know, that's just their time and their space at that point. Then you see older people and they're saying, well, I believe death is this. Another person says, I believe death is this. And, the you know, the medical community says, no, this is what it is because we know. And when really nobody knows what death is because nobody's come back to say what it is. We just conceptualize or feel and get that other energy of the global mind to decide it'll be okay for me. It's just going to be a passing. It's just going to be I'll go to sleep one night and I'll wake. I won't wake up the next day in this space. You know, or in other words, you conceptualize and you formulate that that will work for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you, those are just the diversities of the individual and how important that is, though, because, like you said, without that, you really need that.
Yeah. Mm.
I think we're coming to healthcare now where healthcare is having a crisis of diversity right now because they always
yeah.
believe that they had this peer, this staunch tower in which their thoughts and their beliefs were the mind, the brain, the body, the physical entity is this, and this is how we can alter it because they're visualizing, you know, through their research, this is how we see it as, and this is how we can use our mind and our thoughts to alter it. When really, is that really you doing that, or is there something else doing that, or is there more to it? And I
yeah.
really think there's more to it. So when
yeah.
well, let's talk about, you know, you even mentioned in the back of the book, you talked about the brain and about the energy level of it, and you said about 40 hertz. And, you know, it's funny because so many of the intuitive and spiritual people now are saying you need to ground yourself to the earth and you need to raise your vibration. And isn't that exactly
mm-hmm.
what you're saying, just in different words?
Yeah, it is, and I may not be preaching in exactly the same kind of way.
Correct.
Because I'm a scientist by training and background and so forth. I'm just trying to tell people this is the way things are, and
mm-hmm.
I do point to this whole discussion in chapter 5 of my book that connects the brain waves to the different layers of the earth is really a tremendously powerful, I would say at least, a tremendously powerful evidence that our minds or our brains are connected to this larger field of the earth. And as I would say today, as part of the shift in the Mayan calendar, we are now have to sort of adapt to a new mind and actually choose a new kind of a mind to put ourselves in resonance with. And
mm-hmm.
as part of that, it means resonating with the earth, because that is the entity that is mediating the new mind. That comes through the earth. And as it comes to the earth, it has certain frequencies that are expressed in our brain waves. So yes, I would say so. Except there is one thing I might be differing from a lot of people then, because you will sometimes hear people say that, you know, I want to be more connected to the earth, etc.
Right.
But in the way I'm looking at it, you cannot be disconnected to the earth. You're always connected to the earth. Your thoughts are always within the framework of what the earth is providing to our minds. But you do have, you actually have some kind of choices as to what versions of the mind that you want to download. And that's a bigger topic, but the intention is tremendously important, I would say. The intention of creating a mind of oneness, I think, is the first step. and now this is available and possible, and we'll have to work on it, or we can work on it. We don't have to. It's a choice, I would say. It depends on what you focus on and what your intentions are.
Goodness. And can you tell us about the Tree of Life? I know that was a very important topic in your book.
Yeah, well, the Tree of Life, the Tree of Life is what, you know, it's been said that this is the most widespread of all myths of antiquity, because you find it all over the world. The Maya certainly had it, and you know, my own ancestors in Sweden certainly had it. The Vikings had a big ash that they called Yggdrasil, which was sort of the center of the universe, that the big creative force of the universe, so to speak. But if you travel around the world, you will find it among the Maori in New Zealand, and you'll find it, of course, in the Bible, where the Tree of Life, you know, it's also an aspect of the Tree of Life, is this the tree of knowledge of good and evil, so to speak. And these are actually ways of symbolizing the human mind, I would say. This idea of knowledge of good and evil is really like at the time people downloaded the mind of polarity, of duality between light and darkness, you might say. And so that's the reality that came to shape them as they departed from this unity mind that had existed before civilization came about 5,000 years ago. There was originally unity, then people downloaded duality, and then the duality allowed people to think analytically, to separate things. But it also made people be quite judgmental, so to speak.
Right.
They would start to see others as good and bad, and they couldn't conceive of anything other than that. So that's really the 5,000 years have been shaped by that particular duality of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, so to speak. So these are the Tree of Life is then also have, you might say, physical correspondences, like on the Earth, the polar axis is one level of the Tree of Life, but each individual is also you might look upon your spine as an expression of the same Tree of Life. And all of these levels of the Tree of Life are in resonance with each other. They are metaphysical entities, ultimately, you might say they are what provide the structure of ourselves and the structures of the mind. When we think of ourselves, our bodies, they are organized according to back, front, right, left, up, down, so to speak. That's typical of our all, and that's the Tree of Life that is creating that organization. That it's the metaphysical source of that organization, and it exists on many different levels, and all of these levels are in resonance with each other. And whenever there is some kind of a change, when there is an introduction, for instance, as of the duality of the good and evil, then it will go through all of these levels so that things are created consistently and coherently, so to speak. The Tree of Life, I think, also in the Mayan worldview is, and I think this is an important point, is that it is the source of the four directions, and that it sort of follows from the fact that the tree of life on the earthly level is the polar axis that goes from north to south. And so in this sense, the four directions are is a creation of the tree of life, and the four directions have played a tremendous role in the history of the mind, so to speak. And it's behind the fact that the Egyptian pyramids and so many other ancient monuments were created in perfect alignment with the four directions. We have lost much of that feeling of connection to the four directions, but in the ancient right. times they knew these directions, that's what creates the structure of our minds. And so we want to build pyramids or whatever monument that honor these four directions, because that is what gives us our ability to evolve our thinking and to create a certain kind of society in the way that they did in the ancient times.
And do you think perhaps that now we might have come out of that duality time, and with the concept that people are now saying with being the power of oneness, more the time that we're saying, let me see how I want to say this, we're more saying that when energies come through or come out, just let them flow through you. So in other words, being that power of oneness, we're just letting them wash over. We're not grabbing on to give it judgment. We're just letting the energies go.
Well, I would say, after 2011, when I faced the shift in the Mayan calendar, now...
Right.
This oneness mind is available, but it's only been available for like 3 years. And the
right.
other versions of the mind are still available. And I think we see very serious conflicts going. And this year especially, it's been a renewal of conflicts between East and West in the world. And
right.
these things are still there. And as time passes, the toddlers, those that are toddlers today
mm-hmm.
and might have been completely born into this oneness mind that became available in 2011, in 30 years, maybe they will be really, that will be the predominating way of looking at the world. But at the same time, today we also see the playing out of very much this kind of duality in because people still choose that duality.
Mm-hmm.
They live in environment where these things are not even discussed. And, as you pointed out when we started to talk, 40 years ago
mm-hmm.
we could not have had this discussion. And in large
right.
parts of the world, they wouldn't even, it's so far from their way of thinking that it couldn't be discussed. So it's more like we're at a time when people have to make the choices between these different ways of being, and hopefully, at least I think that the more we're able to make real to people this possibility of downloading a unity mind that has never been available before. That's the big thing, really, with the shift that happened really recently in the Mayan calendar. It's never been available before, not in this form anyway. And over time, I hope that will be the choice. And certainly, time is on its side, I would say. But
mm-hmm.
People will also, at this moment, you see people choosing the other ways also.
I think we see that also when people make the choice of not being here on the earth altogether. They choose to just, for a lack of a different way, we just say they're just time to leave the earth. And you see
yeah.
a lot of that, because I've seen a lot of crisis, what I call crisis of the heart. I've seen quite
yeah.
a few of women and men just within probably the past month where they've had what I call an implosion of the heart. The heart actually explodes. They have a heart attack that it actually explodes inside their body. They're just in such conflict and just disarray and judgment or whatever it might be, or just ready to go because maybe they just want to go because this isn't where they want to be, but maybe they're just more anxious to be able to come back again too. I mean, there have been many different times, you know, we look at that.
Yeah.
And we say, really, where do you go after you die? What do you do? And you talk in your book about where does our karma, where does our souls and our spirit go? What is that all about? And, you know, there's a lot of that going on right now. And I think when people say, oh, someone committed suicide or something, they say, oh, well, they were just chicken. They just didn't want to handle the world or they didn't want to deal with their issues. I really find that that's such a judgment and an offense to the spirit person themselves that we really shouldn't be – we really should say God bless them and I await to see what they come back as next and let that be.
Yeah.
There should never be judgment about anybody or anything, you know.
No.
And
no.
We constantly are trying to do or force – and I think that's what you're saying, you know, this is downloaded energy into our minds, and we're still resonating with that old language, and that old language just has to go away. And it will go away either by less people using it or less people being around interacting with it. It's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like purging the earth, you know. It's time to till the soil, more to say.
Yeah. No, I think what you're saying, I think that is happening too. And it's, I have nothing more to add to that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe also you said about the brain, you know, with resonating at a certain energy frequency. I think that some of our elders may be ready to, you know, resonate with that, but I also see a lot of younger people having a lot of brain issues. And I think that's just, are they really having a, quote, what I call mental disorder? I don't believe so. I think if we went into every decade, you know, we have a date where we go into the mental facilities and we reevaluate these people at the level at which we are now, and we say, goodness gracious, look at that. She just told me something that might was going to come up, and it showed up, and we thought at that time that it was a disorder. Therefore, we put them in these places.
Yeah.
So in other words, when we don't like these new beliefs or these new thoughts, we tend to secularize them or we tend to put them in compartments where you talk about compartmentalization.
Mm-hmm.
You put them in these compartments where you might be able to deal and not deal or not have them affect the society or the whole or the being or the oneness.
Yeah.
When really... I think we're doing more of that right now. I think we're doing a whole lot of compartmentalization and really trying to hold on to that so it will create value for who we think we are. Those that are able to let go of their value and just say, I don't know who I am, I'm just a being, they are the ones that are on the other side saying, you'll get it eventually. It's just, it's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think what we call or have called mental disorders are sometimes just products of these shifts that are allowing for a new mind and allowing for new ways of thinking. And when these people are first coming into Earth and expressing themselves in ways that are unfamiliar to the way things are, they have been labeled mental disorder. And it's just not that. It's sort of a new order. It's a new framework. And this also points to these findings that I'm relating in the book, that the mind doesn't come to the brain. It really has large consequences for how we look upon mental disorders, how we look upon personal development, and who we are in the first place. In the way I'm presenting it, we're primarily the product of a divine plan of evolution of the mind, so to speak. And in the other way of looking at the, you might say, the mainstream academic medical way of looking at it, we are primarily a piece of matter. And even though there's so much so much talking against that kind of a view, it's still the predominating paradigm in health and medicine and so forth, and it has tremendous consequences how we are looking upon health and disease and how to deal with it and so forth, I think that it doesn't serve us really to have that kind of a view that we are that our brains are producing our minds. What I would argue also is that if you know each brain would be producing the mind, I think it would be tremendously difficult for us to understand one another. It would be a world where everybody would go around. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everyone would be going around in their own minds and with no connection, so to speak. And that's not how it works. I mean, in reality, first of all, we do understand each other for the most part, and not only that, we do experience that our lives are very much often connected through our minds. We experience these synchronicities, these amazing events that we can't explain from a materialist perspective, where you know you run into your neighbor on the other part of the world or whatever is happening, and because our minds are all connected, or we're all connected to this same global mind, and the shifts in this global mind will create shifts that are generating synchronicities and things happening to create a coherent world where we're all somehow connected. And I think this is very fortunate for us. Otherwise, you know, I cannot even imagine what it would be like if everyone would be so disconnected that if the case would be if every mind was created by a particular brain.
Yeah, and you look at it, you have to have some sort of level of where everybody believes, and this is the belief, the knowledge, and this is the vein that runs through us. And it's sort of like when you look at, you know, each other, you say, I recognize you as a human, and you recognize me as a human. It would be crazy if we didn't do that, you know.
Right.
And that's, we have to have that basis and that coherence there. But then we also have to say, where does our dream, I call it our dream world, where does our dream world take us? Where does our spiritual mind take us? And I think that right now in the evolution of where we are, of losing that duality of right and wrong and all that, I mean, more people are having more free will of the mind and being able to connect better and say, you know, I think this or I think that. And when we try to speak it out in this world, it comes along with a lot of negative influence. And so a lot of people have kind of recoiled and said, well, maybe I shouldn't say that, or maybe I shouldn't do that. So I think that there's a lot of, I put my finger in the fire and yes, it burned me. So I'm going to wait. You know, I'm going to save the rest of my match and I'll try and light it again another time, you know. But really, I think it, kind of in a crazy way, I try to talk to my clients or to people and I say, you know, I really find that I think we are losing by vestige of the internet and stuff, everybody having this instantaneous life that they have, not writing these things down, not ingraining them somewhere in the form of writing that we know. So let's say if I have a really great thought or something, write it down on a piece of paper, in a book, somewhere, something. Mm-hmm. Because then that, let's say eventually those other people that may be searching for that will be able to find that. You know? That's how those ideas. It's just like I've got about 8 books I went to the library and picked up about 2 weeks ago, and they were written in the 1800s. And it says the great thinkers and the philosophers. And I look back on that and I says, but gosh, that's what we know today. Mm-hmm. Were they that great of a thinker then? And they were ostracized then, and they weren't accepted then, and that wasn't the way of the world. But they managed to put it down in a book on paper, and now we pick it up and think it is, oh, my goodness, this is a revelation. Where you hear all these gurus now saying, oh, this is great new world concept, you know. I put my name on it. I know it. I know awakening. I know awareness. I know consciousness. And, gosh, did you just read about the great thinkers of the 1700s, you know? So really... Mm-hmm. You know, I see it as that, and I think that, you know, more people should start opening up their minds and maybe writing it down, documenting something, putting something on a piece of paper. It could be 4 words. It could be 2 sentences. It could be something, and just keep, turn the page, next day something else, because eventually all that cohesion will eventually start rising where we will say, oh, now I get it. Now I understand it.
Yeah.
Now it resonates with me, and now I can share it with others, and then others will be able to share it with each other, and, oh, isn't it a great world again, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's your evolution, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. Carl, we have come almost to the end of the hour. I'd love to get to talk about, we have about 5 more minutes. If you give us a great concept that we didn't touch on, that would be wonderful. Let's see, did we talk about the waves and stuff? You talked about that.
Yeah, I think, I did. Well, you know, I could reiterate, my website is www.Kalleman.com, and my book is available there and on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles and other bookstores. And I would say that this is a completely new way of looking at history, mm-hmm. and the rise of our civilization, where we see the history of the mind as the causative factor. The evolution of the mind is the causative factor. And for instance, only when the mind had been downloaded for the first time 5,000 years ago, approximately, then mm-hmm. it became possible for people to think analytically and to develop technologies and to start to use numbers and start to write and so forth. And all the continued history of mankind can be understood from this evolution, which is very precise in time, so to speak, the evolution of this global mind that the Mayan calendar describes. And I think we touch on a lot of aspects of it, but I would say this is also a thing that really is good to have, see the actual evidence of, because it's one thing to speculate and to philosophize, and it's another thing to actually see the basis of these ideas in reality, in a changing reality, and so to see the hard evidence for in favor of these new philosophies that is coming out, that we are not exactly the same kind of people that we thought we were. Our origins are quite different. Our minds are really of a divine origin, and it follows the pattern of a divine evolution plan.
And I think sometimes when people say what we're looking at is creating heaven on earth, what we're really looking at is creating that divine energy, connecting it to the earth, and seeing that,
yes.
And just what you said, we'll see it. You know, I've caught myself over the past 3 days saying, I only came here to create heaven on earth. And I'm going, oh, gosh, why did I say that, you know? I want to go ding dong, you know? So I guess that's my next thing. But I have said that over decades, you know? And I'm almost 60 now, and I know that. So that I think that's where a lot of people need to be not afraid to say that. And when people try to construct us down the road of, no, you can't say this, you know, you have to do this because you have to do this because you have to do that, you know, for us to, again, recoil and say, I'm just going to keep working within my framework because that doesn't fit my framework anymore. And how hard is that to give up? But I think I'm saying in the next 10 years, you'll see more heaven on earth issues, you know, being constructed. Mm-hmm. In other words, we'll be more connected. I don't see it in 5. I do see it in 10. So I think it's a great world that the world, you know, as we evolve, don't you think? Things are just moving right along. It's just divine order, as you would say, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Carl, could you tell us a little bit? We have about 2 minutes. Could you just briefly say you had just taken a vacation, do you feel that the whole world is on the same energy as certain spaces of the world, or do you think some spaces on the earth, you know, are a little bit more, I guess, as we would say, higher frequency, more evolved?
I would say that the world is quite different in different parts, the way they are relating to these new, the incoming energies. That's my way of looking at it. And the way that the world is compartmentalized is, you know, it's primarily in the Eastern and the Western Hemisphere. And why there is a difference of a Western and the Eastern civilization is, I think, for the first time ever, somebody has provided an explanation to that, and that's what I'm doing in the fifth chapter of my book. And it's not only that. The four directions are playing a great role in the way, in the minds of people. You know, I originally come from Sweden, which is really a northern energy, but it's also a part of the world that is sort of separated the East and the West. And I was recently then in a spiritual retreat in India for a month, and the way of thinking there is just so completely, totally different. And it has to do with how these different parts of the world are and now I'm in New Mexico, where I live in the United States. And the world is actually organized geographically according to the four directions, and when new energies are coming in, they're affecting the world very differently in different parts, I would say.
And I think they're in flux, too. I think what might be at one spot at one time, it may shift and change, you know, as the time goes. I know for myself, I've been so looking for a place to relocate to, and it's like, but it's in flux, and I can't come up with an answer. So I think, you know, civilization and the earth and everything changing in flux, I guess maybe the real answer is you are where you're meant to be. So with that, I think that's where we are, you know, and maybe physical location really sometimes may help raise our vibration, but it really isn't the answer in the long run. We're meant to be where we are.
Yeah.
So, Carl, it has been an absolute wonderful hour with you. I'll tell you, we just kept going and going, and we had no stops. So thank you so much for being such a wonderful
guest.
Thank
you very much.
It's been our pleasure.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
It's so wonderful. And please do come back when you have your next book, because we would love to have you on.
Yeah. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have everyone with us today, and it's just been a great topic. You know, you really have to look out and see, how are you fitting into this world, and what are you feeling, and what are you saying? And you know those random little words that come out of your mouth? Maybe just write them down. Write them in a book. Write them in a little, you know, little notepad, and keep it, you know, in your purse and your desk, and say, goodness, maybe I'll reflect on that another day. And maybe you'll say, you know, gosh, I can't believe I said that those days. your mind, your connection to the global mind, your connection to the earth. This is all new topics. This is all new concepts and words and verbalization. A lot of people are trying to learn. But I think that, as we've said with Carl, next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be a great shift in the world, and it's wonderful to be a part of it. So thank you so much for joining us today with Carl Johan Kalaman. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. If you'd like to find out more information, feel free to email me or contact me directly through the show page. My website is www.mypersonaladvocate2.com, or you can just Google my name and you'll find tons of information. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a great show, and have a wonderful day.